Good evening, it's 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Juliana Gonsalves. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie. Let's start off with your local news headlines. A group of medical students at Queen's University are organizing action aimed at addressing housing and homelessness in Kingston. While it's called the Queen's Medicine Municipal Day of Action, the work has been underway for weeks. Students have been meeting with local service providers, community organizations, and experts, and are now bringing their findings directly to city councillors. The last time the event was held was in 2021, also focusing on housing and homelessness. This year marks a five-year follow-up, as homelessness in Kingston has risen by 133% over that period. First-year medical student Zara Rahman and second-year student Tim Song spoke with CFRC about how the initiative came together.
So this initiative is called the Medical Day of Action, or the Municipal Medical Day of Action, and it is run by a team of medical students right here at Queen's. There are a lot of similar initiatives that happen all across Canada, whether it's through province, whether it's through the entire nation, where we meet up in Ottawa. And we wanted to do something more local here in Kingston as a group of medical students. So the Medical Students Society, also called the Aesculapian Society, has a group of medical students who are specifically working towards equity and advocacy as a committee. And these medical students work independently to do different things around Kingston and around Queens to try to make a difference. For example, we host fundraisers. For example, we host different awareness events. And this year we wanted to bring back an event that's happened previously at Queen's, the School of Medicine, called the Day of Action. So that's kind of how it came to be.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is the first time this has come back since 2021. I was wondering if you could speak to why you decided to bring it back now and why revisit this topic.
Yes, for sure. So this initiative used to be a lot bigger pre-COVID, where people were able to meet in person. Basically, as a quick overview of what a Day of Action is it basically is a bunch of medical students or health professionals looking through the community, whether it's municipal, provincial, or national, like I stated before, to see if there's any issues that as medical students or health professionals we could address. So this was a lot easier to do, as you can imagine, to try to talk to city councilors or talk to municipal government in person. So over COVID, it kind of died down. But just as an example of a few different things that the Kingston team used to work on includes water fluoridation, very important. We don't have that here in Kingston, as well as homelessness relief or housing for the precariously housed, which is, again, a very pertinent issue here in the Kingston community. So as things got back to coming in person and we started having more lively discussions about how we can make a change here at Queen's, the first thing we kind of stumbled upon was this program called the, or this initiative called the Municipal Day of Action. And as we were looking back at past references, talking to past organizers to see what would be a good fit for us moving forward, we found that the topic that they addressed in 2021, housing and homelessness, would be a perfect fit based on all of the pertinent issues that are happening here in Kingston today.
And to add on, we felt like it was very important in the times that we're in right now. So since 2021, homelessness in Kingston has risen, and we've also seen that there are a lot of different barriers. And I think even looking at this politically on how much of this becomes a pertinent topic, this is something that is continuously discussed. And we felt that it may be best for us as medical students to advocate for our future patients, especially considering all the different barriers and how health. There's so much more research coming out now, especially since COVID, on how the social determinants of health. So for those who don't know, those are kind of just factors in your life like income or housing and how much that can actually impact your health. It's not usually just, you know, exercise or diet. It can also be where you live, how much money you have, what access to resources you have. And we found, at least through our research, that with homelessness rising in Kingston, there's also a reduction in those health outcomes as well. And then that could also tie into other issues like wait times in hospitals, for example, in emergency wait times, for example. So we kind of looked at this more holistically as we went throughout our research.
From their consultations, the group developed two key asks for council, focused on improving housing services and health outcomes for unhoused residents. The first calls for better data collection and coordination across services.
We kind of did a more of a deep dive into the research. We looked into health outcomes. We looked into how different municipalities approach this. And one thing we found, as Tim mentioned, was data and the importance of it. So when we did the deep dive, we looked into, so United Way, for example, in Kingston does a lot of data checks. So there's something called the by name list. So not going into the specifics because it is quite complex, but basically the by name list identifies the individuals who are unhoused in Kingston. And these are individuals that are comfortable being recognized and has all of their data, and it allows us to keep track on them and make sure that they're okay. And the way that the city of Kingston does it right now is that they just list how many people are unhoused. So for example, I believe currently it's over 500 in 2025. But as we've mentioned before, there are a lot of barriers to that data, and it may not give the full holistic idea of what's going on, and that can impact what policies we're able to provide in Kingston. So the ask that we have right now is to make sure that that data, so the by name list, or there's something called the Homeless Individuals and Families Information System, has a good idea of who is being unhoused and then who is being housed, so inflow and outflow. And this is important to have, you know, for example, either on housing for homelessness, like as an annual report, just to make sure we have an idea as the city to know where people are at, where folks are at, and to see what different barriers they're experiencing. And then also having a good monthly report card. So I believe it was either United Way or one of the community organizations that did an evaluation on the data and the situation of homelessness in Kingston. And they found that, unfortunately, the data is just not as well upkept in Kingston. So there is that gap. They reported this as being a huge barrier. I believe it's only updated monthly. And sometimes there can be difficulties in recognizing who's being housed and who's not being unhoused. Because when you're living, for example, on the street, and then you were housed and then now you're not housed, that's a day by day. You're surviving day by day, not month by month. So we also looked into other jurisdictions. One, for example, is in Hamilton and the Durham District as well. So in Hamilton, what they do is that they have a lot of comprehensive data. So they not only provide like how many people are unhoused in Kingston, but how many people were housed, how many people are, for example, of different marginalized communities, how many of them are women, how many of them are Indigenous, and then how many of those have been approached, for example, by someone to get housed. So I think that provides more of a realistic idea of what's going on the ground versus just these are how many people are unhoused. And I think that can really benefit one, the government, the municipal government, especially just to figure out when you are coming up with policies, what support you can give. But also I think for the people of Kingston, I think that this would allow for a lot more grace and I think a lot more empathy if you just have an idea of what someone is experiencing and the different layers of it versus just seeing a number, because we as individuals are not just numbers. We all have different stories. And I think having that data would be able to have that better picture of what's going on.
Their second ask emphasizes incorporating Indigenous housing models into local approaches.
So as medical students, we often see, or we often try to look at which populations are more vulnerable or more susceptible to for different health issues. It's the social determinants of health that Zara talked about earlier. And the thing that we, I guess, focused on this year was the sheer number or a sheer disproportionate number of Indigenous individuals mm-hmm. who are experiencing homelessness, not just in Kingston, but globally. We talked to a lot of different community groups here in Kingston itself. We had a conversation with the Language Nest. We talked to 4D. We talked to the Ikanu Patient Services, which is a group that works up with the James Bay Indigenous folk and bringing them back and forth with KGH. And basically, we've decided that we want to ask for more Indigenous-led housing, culturally grounded prevention services, wraparound supports, and basically just strengthening the city of Kingston's truth and reconciliation commitments. So all this to say, for both ask and ask two, for ask one and ask two, the city has been doing amazing work. Mm-hmm. When we talk to some of the different organizations like the Canadian Association for Ending Homelessness, they listed that Kingston is doing a great job in addressing homelessness. So again, for the second ask, it's kind of more of a push towards you're doing a great job towards supporting Indigenous initiatives. We want to see more. We want you to keep doing what you're doing and kind of push that forward. So a few different ways that, again, it's a very broad ask, support, strengthen truth and reconciliation commitments, very broad, very abstract, if that makes sense. So a few different ways that we're kind of hoping that could go about its way could potentially be continuing to invest in more Indigenous-led supportive transitional housing initiatives. So we had a conversation with Tipi Moza, which is the supportive housing, one of the main supportive housing organizations here in Kingston. And they suggested that one aspect of supportive housing that could be important was maybe having more Indigenous-specific housing centers or complexes. Right now, the Language Nest is working on helping individuals who identify as Indigenous to find housing or put in applications. And by having a center that's specifically investing in more Indigenous-led supportive housing would be really beneficial to the community at large. Another way could do this would be to increase municipal funding. Mm-hmm. Another way could do this could be to look at how the Indigenous Community Land Trust, I guess, fits into the implementation of different strategies for building housing in the future, and potentially looking into an Indigenous care center, which basically means working with the local Indigenous partners like the Language Nest to identify a site, maybe funding pathways and implementation timelines to move basically a comprehensive care center forward.
Students are now meeting with city councilors throughout the month of April and hope to bring the conversation to the provincial level as well. Ramon and Song say they've already been getting a response from the Kingston community.
From those initial conversations, I think a lot of folks were really happy that we were talking about it. They were really, the reactions that I've received was a lot of hope and a lot of just hoping that things can get better, and a lot of gratefulness as well that people were looking into this, especially as medical professionals and from the physicians that we've spoken with in our class. So for example, I did an announcement and one of our professors was talking to our class about how important it is to discuss the social determinants of health, to look at medicine outside of just what we learn in a lecture hall, but rather, and just slides, but rather the lived experiences of individuals. And then we've heard that echoed from our peers as well. So a lot of our peers have been approaching us, like a lot of folks, for example, in the first year class have approached me about how excited they are for this initiative to be able to make a difference and to also want to join this initiative if they haven't, like, you know, gotten the chance to. And I think that this shows a lot of optimism and hope that is kind of missing from the public discourse recently. I think things have been really down and sucky for the past few years just with how, I don't know, like how life has been. And I think that this offers a lot of hope and glimmer of optimism that a lot of medical students are approaching with and a lot of faculty members and community members are approaching with.
I would also say that humility has been a big aspect of our community consultation, especially as it's been a lot of learning as we talk to all these amazing organizations and speaking about all the very important and invaluable work that they've done.
Looking ahead as the group dives into conversations with counselors, the group hopes this work will have a positive impact in the Kingston community and continue to grow as an ongoing initiative within Queen's Medicine.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see where this will go. I think that one of the things that really excited me when I first wanted to bring back this event as one of the co-chairs of the Equity and Access Committee was the fact that medical students could have so much fun learning and being so involved in the community as Queen's medical students with Kingston. I feel a lot of the times that Queen's itself feels like a big bubble where we're just nestled into downtown, not really focusing on anything else that happens in Kingston. And the School of Medicine is a smaller bubble embedded within the bigger bubble where we don't even talk to oftentimes the rest of Queens. So I think that this way, having an outlet for people to be able to contribute to the community or learn about the community through advocacy and equity, which are big foundational, I guess, skill sets that medicine or doctors needs, I think is such a great way to, I guess, be connected and understand what's going on, not only with Kingston, but also with our own beliefs and values. I think that this will hopefully be an initiative that continues to grow, not only for medical students, but also for Kingston itself.
I think, like, developing a culture within Queen's Medicine, but even other medical schools, for example, or even within Queens, on how important it is for us to support our own community and be responsible for our own community. It goes down to that very basic idea of humanity that I think is always echoed in, you know, the humanities, medicine, but any field where you help someone that is in need because you are a human being and that person matters. And it the benefit of another person is a benefit for myself as well. So I think that is one thing that we hope to see in medicine, especially as we progress in our careers, as we progress to become, you know, residents or attendings, that we carry this with us, this idea of community consultation, learning from others, humility, and just the humanity aspect, the compassionate care aspect.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. You're listening to your Queen's Campus Beat, Queen's Campus News, here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, or online at cfrc.ca. I'm Henry. We begin with a fire that affected a common student housing area earlier this month. According to reporting published April 7th by the Queen's Journal, a student residence located off campus experienced a fire on the evening of April 6th, which was Easter Monday. While the fire was described as brief, it prompted emergency response and raised ongoing concerns about the condition and safety of off-campus student housing in Kingston. No fatalities have been reported in connection with the incident, but the event adds to a broader pattern of attention toward housing standards in neighborhoods heavily populated by Queen's students. The property involved is part of a cluster of frequently used student rental units, underscoring the continued reliance on aging housing stock in the city's university district. Turning to student governments, new scrutiny has emerged around internal operations within the Alma Mater Society. A report published on April 3rd details concerns raised both internally and externally regarding the AMS Clubs Commission and Campus Affairs Commission. Allegations include poor communication practices and the use of inappropriate language, contributing to dissatisfaction among student groups that rely on these commissions for funding, oversight, and logistical support. This comes at a time when the AMS is already navigating instability following the March 1st resignation of former President Jana Amer and the earlier assumption of duties by incoming President Dryden George, as previously reported in student political coverage. The combination of leadership transition and operational criticism suggests ongoing challenges in restoring confidence in student governance structures heading into the 2026-2027 academic year. Financial concerns are also emerging within AMS Operation Services. It is now known that multiple student services, including the Queen's Pub and separate retail operations, are contributing to an approximate $800,000 gap between projected and actual budgets. Despite steady student use, several services have struggled to meet revenue expectations. The report highlights unsold merchandise inventory and underperforming food service operations as key factors in the shortfall. This deficit raises questions about the long-term sustainability of AMS-run businesses and whether restructuring or service reductions may be required in future budget cycles. In recent university administration news, compensation data released for 2025 is drawing new attention. The top five earners at Queen's University each receive salaries exceeding $400,000 in the 2025 fiscal year. The disclosure comes amid broader institutional budget review processes and increasing scrutiny over spending priorities. The university has already announced a review of its budget model, indicating potential structural changes in how funds are allocated across faculties and services. Thank you for listening. I've been Henry, here with Queen's Campus Beat, your Queen's Campus News on CFRC 101.9 FM.
The Queen's Gaels women's football team participated in Intercollegiate Flag Football Provincial Finals last weekend. The Gaels entered the tournament as the top-ranked team in the 11-on-11 format after sweeping the regional qualifying tournament 3 weeks prior. The undefeated Gaels rolled into Fleming College looking to win the first provincial championship in program history. Though women's football has existed as a concept at Queen's for over a decade, it did not receive official club status until 2021, with their first official season taking place the following year. The team would medal in both 2024 and 2025, building a solid foundation of young players and veterans alike. 2026 marked the breakthrough season for the program, with convincing tournament wins in February and March, earning them a spot in the Football Ontario Provincial Championships in the Tier 1 division. Queens would meet the Western Mustangs in the provincial final, a rematch of March's regional tournament final. The defense, led by fourth-year defender and CFRC alumnus Claire Chow, would smother Western's passing game, while the Queens quarterback, Isabella Shee, would throw three touchdowns to power the Gales to a commanding 27-0 victory and their first provincial title in program history. The Gales will advance to the Football Canada National Finals in Regina. The national finals begin May 1st, and the team is looking to raise funds to cover travel costs. Donations can be made through the Queen's University Giving Portal. For more information, you can also visit the Queen's Women's Football page's social media at QueensWFootball on Instagram. In other sports news, two members of the Queen's Women's Rugby team have been selected to the Canadian National Team. Lizzie Gibson and Chloe Daniels will join two other Queen's alumnus in Taylor Perry and Sophie DeGuti on the roster for the Pacific Four Series. Gibson finished her Queen's career as the program's all-time leading scorer with a staggering 569 career points, breaking the record formerly held by DeGuti. Chloe Daniels played a key role in Canada's silver medal performance at the 2024 Paris Summer Olympics and has won a number of team awards and conference awards over the course of her accomplished Queen's career. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Monday, April 13th, daytime high of 12 degrees, 55% chance of precipitation, going to drop down to 5 overnight. Tuesday, April 14th, slightly warmer, daytime high of 13 degrees, but a 70% chance of rain in the forecast, dropping down to 7 overnight. Wednesday, April 15th, the warmest day of the year so far, daytime high of 18 degrees with a 68% chance of precipitation in the forecast. Thursday, April 16th, the first day of the week not to be projected to have rain, daytime high of 14 degrees going to feel closer to 13, cloudy conditions dropping down to 9 overnight. Friday, April 17th, another high double-digit day, 16 degrees, but we do have a 55% chance of precipitation that will cool things off quite a bit overnight, dropping down to 2, and cooling things off for the weekend, as Saturday, April 18th, we have a high of 10 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, feeling slightly colder around 8. Sunday, April 19th, we've got an 11-degree day in the forecast with a mix of sun and cloud, but it is actually going to feel quite a bit warmer than the 11-degree temperature in the sun. It'll feel up to 16 on Sunday, April 19th. And then starting off next week, Monday, April 20th, daytime high of 11 degrees, but a 62% chance of rain means it's going to feel closer to 8. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week, and just bear in mind, winter overnight street parking restrictions have been lifted as of April 1st. We begin with two long-term road closures. Barry Street to Queen is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street, and Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is closed indefinitely to accommodate construction activity and staging in the area. We have some short-term road closures as well, including Wright Crescent at Palace Road, which is closed for a contractor to complete roadway repairs, pedestrian safety and access improvements, and traffic calming features on Wright Crescent. There is a minimal traffic disruption on Bath Road to Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard. Expect delays for the installation of intersection pedestrian signals. The city is installing intersection pedestrian signals at several locations to make it easier and safer for pedestrians to cross busy roads. They are installing these signals at the following intersections: Bath Road at Lafleur Park, Concession Street at Kings Court Avenue, and Stephen Street at Patrick Street. And that's a wrap for your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Safe driving, everybody.
This is Christina Laurie coming back with K-Town's hottest events and concerts coming up this week. After the show wraps up, you can head to karaoke at Timeout Bar starting at 6, followed by Lindy Hop swing dance lessons at the J-Duck in Wallace Hall on Queen's Campus at 7. Trivia fans can check out One Night Jacks at 7, The Brass Pub at 7:45, or Something in the Water Brewing at 8. Tomorrow on Tuesday, April 14th, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 5 in Springer Market Square. In the evening, Tet Tuesday Collage Club goes from 6:30 to 8:30, and there's Euchre at Daft Brewing at 7. Wednesday, April 15th, board games kick things off at Something in the Water at 5 and the Royal Canadian Legion at 6. Alongside karaoke at Timeout Bar at 6, trivia at Daft Brewing starting at 7, and the Grad Club hosts an open stage drag show at 8, followed by a drag and burlesque show at 8:30. Thursday, April 16th, the Kingston Public Market returns from 8:30 to 5. The Kingston Symphony Spring Vinyl Sale kicks off, running from 4 to 8, and a needle-felted landscape workshop takes place at the Ted Center at 6. Later on in the evening, enjoy drag bingo at Daft Brewing at 7. There is also no shortage of trivia on Thursday with Riverhead at 8, The Grad Club at 8, Something in the Water at 8, and Queen's Pub at 9. Karaoke runs at Jersey's at 8:30 and The Buckle at 9. Friday, April 17th, the Kingston Symphony Spring Vinyl Sale continues from 10 to 6. There's group art therapy at the Tet Center from 6 to 8, trivia at Wild Wings at 7, and the Just for Laughs Roadshow at the Kingston Grand Theater at 7:30. The Ground Up Dance Festival also takes place at the Tet at 8, and there's karaoke at Daft Brewing and The Buckle both at 9. On Saturday, April 18th, the Kingston Symphony Spring Vinyl Sale wraps up from 10 to 4. The Eastern Ontario Spring Stamp Festival runs from 10 to 3 at Crossroads United Church. And to keep on your radar, Record Store Day takes place across several local shops throughout the day. In the evening, you can check out Comedy Debates at The Buckle and Family Feud at Daft Brewing at 8. On Sunday, April 19th, the final day of the Kingston Symphony Spring Vinyl Sale runs from 10 to 2. Karaoke wraps up the weekend at The Merchant and The Toucan, both starting at 9. That was a quick run through of your events for the week. Now into concerts. Tonight, Monday, April 13th, Misty City Music Fest hits The Merchant at 7, and the Morning Doves play Musiki at 8. Tuesday, April 14th, Tom's Tuesday Happy Hour Jam starts at the RCHA at 4. Kristen Martell plays The Coven at 5. Jen Grant performs at the Broom Factory at 7:30, and there's an open mic at Musiki at 8. Wednesday, April 15th, DJ Great White spins at Hotel Wolf Island. Nolan Hubbard performs at the Bank Gastro Bar at 5:30, and there's an open mic at Hotel Wolf Island starting at 7:30. Thursday, April 16th, Nolan Hubbard plays The Coven at 5, followed by Michael George Jam Night at the RCHA at 6:30. Open Season performs at Hotel Wolf Island at 7, Jinx, Naked by 9, and Johnson Street hit the Ale House at 8:30, and the Lazarettes play the Toucan at 9:30. Friday, April 17th, a packed night for concerts. An open mic takes place at Storington Lions Club at 5:30, followed by Christopher Jackson at Lakeside Bar and Grill at 7 and Lynn Miles at Hotel Wolf Island at 7. The Grapes of Wrath acoustic duo perform at Signal Brewery at 7:30. Guilty Pleasures play Time Out at 8. Mellow Lily is at Tiernanog at 9. And late night shows include Dr. Bombay at The Merchant and Tone Cats at The Toucan at 10:30. Saturday, April 18th, Tyler Brett Forks performs at the Social YGK at 7. John Butler takes the stage at the Kingston Grand Theater at 7:30, alongside a Michael Jackson tribute at La Vida Bistro Bar, Sons of Rick and Doghouse at the Broom Factory, and the She Sings Women's Choir Spring Concert at Chalmers United Church. Rumpus, Matt Almeida, and Slim play Overtime at 8. August West performs at Tiernanog at 9. And late night sets include the Oreos at The Merchant and Rocket Surgery at The Toucan, both at 10:30. Finishing off the week, Sunday, April 19th, Tom Savage and Friends perform at the Kingston Yacht Club from 2 to 5, and Il Chanteuse, Chantel Thompson, and Hugh Christopher Brown take the stage at Hotel Wolf Island at 6. That's a quick look at what's happening around Kingston this week. For more details on these events and for the full list of events and concerts, head to our calendars on cfrc.ca. Have an event you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca at cfrcmusic or on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.